Hey, Colette, what's going on?
Racking them and stacking them. How about you?
Well, as always, I am living the dream.
I can see the open collar. I can tell. Well, what will it be?
Oh, what am I feeling like today? Well, hey, anything on special?
Well, there's always the tiki love bowl, but I have to set it on fire before I serve it to you, and that's kind of a nice tie.
Yeah, let's stay away from open flames today. I'll just have the usual.
Sounds good. Hey, hold on one second. Another customer just walked in. Hey, how are you? What will it be today? Who, that guy? That's David. Well, as we know him, D. Fish. He's sort of an all-purpose business talker. Yep, speaking, writing, podcasts, training. He is always talking to somebody about business or music or beer. You never know which way it's going to go, but it's always interesting. In fact, why don't I grab your drink and you go over there and join them?
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of the Beer, Beats, and Business Podcast. I'm glad that you could join us for another round of interesting conversations with interesting people. Today, I'm joined by Aaron Munoz. Aaron is an actor, playwright, and arts educator. And by the way, you might recognize his voice from one of my favorite shows on Netflix, Stranger Things. Here's just a taste of what Aaron and I get into.
Sometimes you're like a little self-conscious about it, but there's something about breathing out and smiling that just really like makes everything better.
I was really excited to have Aaron on the show because he really understands the power of connection and community in creating art, and I think you'll see that. My name is David J.P. Fisher, but everyone just calls me D. Fish. I'm a speaker, author, and business coach, and right now I get to do one of my favorite jobs, be your host on the B3 Podcast. So let's get to it.
Aaron, my friend, how are you today?
D. Fish, what's up, baby?
Oh, so many things. Glad to reconnect after a while.
Yeah, man.
It's been a long while, and I was excited to have you on the show this season since I am talking to a lot of working creatives and talking about this connected world that we're in and how it's affecting them. And you were somebody that I thought of because ever since we first crossed paths, gosh, maybe almost 15 years ago, it seems that you have fully leveraged the new mediums of the day and the old to really kind of forge a career. So first of all, kudos on that. That's very cool.
Thank you.
You know, I'm talking with people about connection this season. And if you think about the world of theater, of acting, of writing dramatically, how would you say connection has influenced how that community and that profession works, breathes, and operates?
I think by nature, right? You know, I'm a storyteller, right? So as an actor and as a writer, and as a producer, like you're always looking to tell stories. And I think as human beings, we're always in need of stories. Mm. We want stories. We want narrative. We want to scratch that part of our brain that allows us to experience different things. I mean, how many things do we have? I mean, the queue on Netflix is not a thing anymore, but how many things do we have like on our queue on Netflix?
Right.
Like how many series are we just like, I can't watch it. I can only watch so much because we're still craving stories. So as a storyteller, it's a really cool thing and that it's not like, it's not going away. That idea.
Well, so actually, I'm going to pause for a second because it's something really interesting. Is it almost that we live in a world now where we have so many stories available to us because we can all share our stories in a way that we never could before?
I think so. I think there's something to that. I think that the rise of social media, both the good and the bad,
we are able
to really share our experiences. You know, there's positives and negatives from that. The positives are when you see, you know, really amazing things like getting hints from the Mideast during the Ferguson protests, how to deal with tear gas, like on Twitter,
you know,
like that's amazing. Like that's their story. And that's, they're saying if you are fighting against something, if you are, you know, if you need help, we're giving you tips on how to deal with that, because that's what we've dealt with in our own personal lives and our own stories. So things like that are just like, it's kind of mind blowing.
Right. And it's from a world away, but it's actually interesting you say that, because it makes you realize that how the stories we tell are actually not that different, or the stories that we're surrounded by are not that different.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter if you're in Missouri or Egypt.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and there's the old adage that like there are no new stories. It's just how we go about telling them and communicating them.
And so how do you find new ways of telling stories in this environment? Because if we just say, yes, everybody can share their story because there's things like social media or, you know, the democratization of the tools of production, right? You just, if you want to make a movie, really all you need is an iPhone. Might not be a good movie, but you could do it.
For sure.
How do you, as somebody who has dedicated his life to this craft of storytelling, like what is your goal to maybe take it to the next level? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you have to incorporate, you know, the craft and the work and the new technologies, and be open to the kind of technological wave that we're in. Mm-hmm. Just for instance, it was unheard of 15 years ago for a quote unquote film actor to be doing like an internet series, right? That's like crazy, you know? But in order to kind of fully take in the way that we can, in a professional way, as professional like storytellers, to really rise our game, you have to incorporate those things. You have to incorporate the new with the old and be able to kind of run and gun a bit, and be able to say yes to new things. I think being open as an artist is something that you continually have to work on and do. And in the process of creating whatever you're creating, whoever, you know, whatever thing you're doing in the act of creation, you have to be open. The idea of our connectivity is something that we have to, you know, discerningly look at, just as you look at any opportunity, but you also have to be open.
Sure. You know, as you're talking about this openness, I think that's a really interesting idea, that you have to be open to these new opportunities. It maybe is not like it was in the past, where if you're going to be a stage actor, you were stage actor, or film, or TV, and that was it. What has changed, or has anything changed, even in the time that you've been in your field? Has it become easier or harder to actually create because of this connectivity?
It's much easier. I think it's much easier. I spent a couple of years ago, I was in Nashville, it's where I'm located, and my wife was finishing grad school, and we were thinking of making the move to LA. I just signed with a new manager, and he's awesome and great, and I'm still with him, and I love him, and we have a great relationship. And I was like, I'm going to go out there for 6 weeks, see what's what.
Okay.
Because I've done the New York thing, I've done the Chicago thing, you know, I lived in Atlanta for a bit, so I've definitely, you know, I know what it is to be in a big market.
Right.
I went there, and a lot of the feelings that I had about, you know, why I left New York were coming, you know, to the forefront. I felt I was there waiting for phone calls.
Okay.
And anytime you're in that position, it's not a strong position to be in, you know,
for
so many people, especially as an actor, that's your MO. You have to have someone say yes in order for you to work. I was done with that. And I was like, you know what? People are creating here, and you can create anywhere.
Right.
You can make stuff, and you can write stuff. That idea that it's accessible now is true. I mean, last year, some good buddies and I did a short in Nashville, you know, with a shoestring budget at his parents', you know, house in the woods, and we took it to South by Southwest.
That's awesome.
We're able to do that because of the way that we can have access to these things right now. And I didn't live in LA or New York or wherever. I did it because that's where I live, that's where my family is, and that's where I want to create.
Nice. And that reminds me of the, and I'm going to forget the name, but you did a few internet videos, the Freddie Love. Was that right?
Yeah, Tennis Tips with Freddie Love. Yeah.
We will definitely put a link to that because it's fantastic. Like how did something like that get made? Because it was kind of out there,
yeah.
But in a really great way.
Well, I'll also give a shout out to the short, the South by Southwest short called Thesaurus, written and directed by Drew Maynard, who also helped me with Freddie Love. So those are my guys.
Okay.
Drew and Caleb Dirks is a wonderful cinematographer based in Nashville, and he does a lot of stuff. So I had written Freddie Love a long time ago. I was going to start a sketch comedy thing with some friends in Nashville.
Okay.
And we kind of all just got busy and all. And then the company that I have, Nashville Story Garden, which is an incubator for new work, and we also produce works too. We were needing, you know, we pair actors with writers on a night, and actors cold read new stuff.
Okay.
At the very like gestation of Nashville Story Garden, we didn't have much stuff. We didn't have much stuff to read. Actors were interested, but there weren't a lot of writers in it. So I was like, I'm just going to look at my computer and pull out a whole bunch of stuff and just have stuff for people to read. Freddie Love, which I had written for myself, was read by someone cold, and people just loved it and they ate it up. And so that really got me thinking, you know what? I got to do something with this. I have the ability to do something with this, and I want to do something with this. So then I wrote a couple more and shot that one more of just like, hey, let's just do this.
<Let's> just right.
Get it together. Let's do this. You know, I've played tennis since I was like 2 years old. My dad's a tennis pro. So like I have all of these things that are like in my wheelhouse. And then as far as the comedy is concerned, that's just the stuff that I like to do as an actor. And that's what tickles my funny bone. It was shot in one day. And I think it was a Sony A7 is what it was shot on. And then I edited it with Drew. And then we had got accepted to the Nashville Film Festival. And, you know, it's still got a life. There's still a lot of views on Vimeo and stuff. People are still checking it out.
Well, so. That's cool. Well, to your point, it's really interesting, this ability to just create. And as you were even saying, like doing things with people you like and with friends. And you kind of see that like when you watch movies, right? You'll kind of see like, oh, that's Judd Apatow's crew. Or,
sure,
you know, you see that the same actors just like each other, hang out with each other in the same movies. It's kind of going back all the way to Frank Sinatra. Like he just wanted his friends around and he wanted to hang out in Las Vegas. So he's like, all right, let's make some movies. What's fascinating to me is you're talking almost about an experience that wouldn't have been able to happen in Nashville 20 or 30 years ago.
Totally.
But now you're like, hey, this is just where I want to be. I think a lot of times we think about outsourcing as something that, okay, we've spread out graphic designers or computer programmers, but really even, you know, creatives, wherever they can find their little community, they can just start making stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all like in any business, it's relationship based.
Right.
And you have to find the people that get you and get what you do. I mean, the work at the end of the day is always number one for any
sure.
business. It's about the work. But the relationships are a close second.
Mm-hmm.
And they really help inform the work and make the work better. I mean, you know, companies and entrepreneurs all over the place have their go-to people that they have a shorthand with. That's like a film set.
Yeah.
You know, that they really don't have to kind of start with square one when they're on a project. They know, okay, this guy's going to take care of it and he's just going to go. You know, this woman's going to do this and she's just going to rock it out. So like, you know, having that kind of shorthand and relationship with people is, I think, essential to continuing to do good work.
I mean, that makes so much sense. It is about relationships, right? It doesn't matter what your business is, whether it's creating art and entertaining people or making a website work, right? Or doing accounting.
Right.
I like that. We got to go do our station identification, but I want to ask you about something first. Speaking of relationships and just creating wherever you are, you got to be Barb's dad. How did that happen, right?
So I auditioned for season one of Stranger Things And there was, I'm a huge research guy. I love to know as much about a project that, you know, I'm just auditioning for. And there was nothing. I couldn't get the full script. I just had like little details. And, you know, I auditioned and they actually asked for, I sent in a tape and they asked for some more photos. So, you know, I think I got close. I made some fans with the casting directors or the, you know, or the brothers. And then season two rolled around and it was on one of my big wants. But like, you know, you just put it out there. And then it came down the pike and I was also rocking this awesome stash and I was like, I was like, I wanted it so bad. And I, you know, I shot it and sent in the tape and then, you know, like a week later, I'd gotten it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty, you know, my wife is always my best reader. And whenever she reads with me off camera, while I send in a tape, I always book it. Now she reads with me a lot, but more often than not, you know, like, yeah, she's always like, well, you know, you're the reason that you're on Stranger Things.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's interesting though, because my wife didn't know who you were. But we actually were watching Stranger Things the first season. We're not a big TV series kind of people. So when I found out that you were in season two, I was just like, oh, I was so excited. And she's like, what, why? And I'm like, the guy who's on the wall, he's going to be on our TV. And with that, I'm going to pause for a second so I can explain my comment, but we got to do our quick station identification. Everybody, you are listening to the Beer, Beats, and Business podcast. I'm your host, David J.P. Fisher. Everyone calls me D. Fish. My guest today is my friend Aaron Munoz, who is an actor, playwright, arts educator, and if you haven't already figured out, a proud husband and father. His recent work includes being Barb's dad on season two of The Stranger Things, and he's also co-writing and starring in Lost Laughs, the slapstick tragedy of Fatty Arbuckle, which is a world premiere play at Merrimack Repertory Theater. Aaron, just if you want to find out more information about you, where can they do that online? Where can they get in touch?
My website is aaronmunoz.com, M-U-N-O-Z. My company, Nashville Story Garden, nashvillestorygarden.org. And on Twitter and Instagram, I am at Stogie Munoz.
Love it. So confession time. I'm kind of like a little bit of a stalker with you, Aaron. And the reason why Aaron and I have a shared friend, her name is Colette D'Antona, and you would know Colette because she is our bartender at the top of this show.
That's right. And she's probably listening. What up, Colette? What up?
Yeah. So that's how we met. And at her wedding, many moons ago on the East Coast, you and I were sharing a beverage together, just sitting at a table, and the photographer came, shot a photo. And when I saw it, it was just a really great photo of you and I. And I had a 5x7 black and white copy of it. And when I was decorating my condo here before I met my wife, I had this hallway wall. It had three picture frames and I'd had two of them filled, one with a black and white photo of my parents and me. One was actually a black and white of me and an ex. So that was empty. And then the other one was the black and white photo of me and Aaron Munoz. So when my wife moved in, I replaced her photo, obviously, to fill in the empty frame. And so there was three black and white photos. And now it's still there, me and my wife, my parents and me, and me and Aaron. So I got to say, look, Barb's dad is on our wall before it was even cool.
Yeah, I have to say that is one of my favorite all-time like photos. Like it's a iconic, classic, like two dudes at a wedding just hanging out, looking good. Like we were looking good.
We looked great.
You know, like we were definitely pimped out for the wedding. one of the best weddings I've ever been to. And I didn't have to do anything for it. I was just a guest and it was just awesome. And Colette was beautiful and everything. But that photo.
All in one. So yeah, my wife asked me, she's like, why do you have that? And I'm like, we look baller. That's why it's up.
Come on.
All right. Well, we'll get back on track. But I had to make that confession But I know you, like me, are a big beer fan. One of our other first chances to hang out was in Manhattan.
At McSorley's.
Yeah, McSorley's. And that's how I know you like the light and dark. But what are you drinking right now? What's interesting to you?
Right now, I have a Magic Hat Porter in my fridge.
Oh,
which is really good. It's like a special release. And, you know, since I'm on the Northeast, I'm surrounded by all these awesome Northeast breweries. So I've been a fan of like Magic Hat and Magic Hat number 9. My first gig out of grad school in 2004 was a Northern Stage in Vermont, and they had some up there, and I was like, this is great. And that's like, you know, 2004. So craft beer was still really local and small.
Right, right.
You know, hadn't hit the kind of zeitgeist that we're in right now.
Word, I gotcha.
So yeah, that's what's in my fridge. But we go to a theater. We call it a theater bar, but it's just really just a bar that has a lot of rotating taps. So you know, it depends. I right now I like, you know, because it's colder, I like porters and stouts. But after a show, I want something a little crisper, like a, you know, an IPA or yeah, just something a little more refreshing after I've sweat on stage for a while.
Gotcha. Well, I know, and you were saying before, because you're from KC originally, correct?
That's right. Kansas City, Missouri, born and raised.
There you go. So that's, was that Boulevard?
Yeah, Boulevard. That's the big gun in town. And I've been a fan of them for a long time. They finally just started like shipping to Tennessee. So
nice.
I don't have to like bring 6-packs, you know, in the car every time I come home from Christmas back.
Hey, I still have a friend who every time he's out on the East Coast visiting family, they'll drive and he'll come back with 2 cases of Yingling because they still don't sell Yingling in Illinois. So,
oh man,
he's just like a booze runner. I'm like, is it really that good? I mean, it is. I definitely enjoy it. You know, it's a nice, you know, light beer, but I'm like, okay, you got a problem.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. What are you drinking right now?
You know, I'm like you where, especially when it's these cold, dark, miserable days of February in Chicago, I do find solace in the dark stuff. So I actually found the 200th anniversary Guinness sampler pack.
Oh man.
If you can find it, go. I highly recommend it. And what it is there's four different stouts. It's 200 years from them first coming to the United States, which was in 1818. So it's that, it's their Foreign Extra, it's their Antwerp Stout, and it's a Guinness Original Double X Stout. And these are not like the nitro base, you know, little gadgets.
Sure.
Nothing like that. This is definitely dark, chewy. You drink it, you're like, oh yeah, this is why Guinness has been around for 300 years.
Yeah.
They do that right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what I'm doing. And actually right now, as we speak, I am enjoying a Chang beer. Because a year ago I was in the beautiful country of Thailand on my honeymoon, and right now I needed something to remind me of the beautiful, beautiful tropical beaches.
Oh, that's great, man. That's awesome. That's awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I'll have to wait. I have a show tonight, so I'm going to have to lay off until post show, but then I will definitely have a couple.
Fair enough. You can raise one for me. So
yeah.
So you definitely got some good beers you're drinking. I always like to ask about music too. So apparently this season it's Stump D Fish time. So tell me about Coming Home by Leon Bridges.
It is, it's just this, it's an awesome album. It is like, if you step back into the like 50s, 60s, it's old school R&B soul. And yeah, it's just really upbeat, beautiful, soulful music. And it's my warm-up song for the show that I'm doing or my warm-up album. Every show I have a different album that I warm up to. And so like you said, going back to Thailand, there'll be be times where I'll listen to music or hear a song or hear an album and I'll be like, oh, that was that show. That was my warm-up song for that show and that character and that play. For this, the play gets heavy pretty quickly, but the top of the play really needs to be light. So I needed something that would, you know, lift me up a little bit, and it just puts me right in that spot.
Dude, that's awesome. Very cool. You know what? I think we've come to a nice place to end this.
Right on, brother.
I think that's a great place to stop. So thank you. Thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks, man. It's been great talking to you. We'll have to get together and get a beer in real life really soon.
That would be great. You know what? I always ask my guests at the end of each show, what's one tip they would give to somebody to make today a little bit better? What would it be?
I think today there's an exercise I like to do, and you just it's from Thich Nhat Hanh. He's this Buddhist cat who passed away the last couple of years. But you just take a deep breath in, and you breathe out, and you smile. And it's a little weird. Sometimes you're like a little self-conscious about it, but there's something about breathing out and smiling that just really like calms you down, makes everything better. So breathe and smile, peeps.
I love it. I love it. Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks, brother.
As always, thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links to the topics in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. You can also share this episode through social media and leave reviews through iTunes, Stitcher, or any of your favorite podcasting services. This episode, like all others, is brought to you by our regulars over at Patreon. If you'd like to be one of the people with your own spot at the bar, we'd love to have you. Visit patreon.com/B3 and become a regular today. Want to get in on the conversation? Easy. Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar, and we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.
Well, you got me. A bunch of your guys came in. I'm all tied up right now. I have no choice. They take me to the wall, and they put a microphone on my... So I was like, all right, I'll do it. It's been a couple of years of escaping different nondescript white vans. But you got me.